difference. He was dressed in his usual faded jeans and shirt-tail-out clothing, and with round eyeglasses on and his intelligent, introspective expression, he looked like an accountant who enjoyed listening to Aerosmith after a day of crunching numbers. Although he was amazingly athletic, living by his wits was actually how he put bread on the table and iPods in his kids' ears, and he was very good at his work. Indeed, there were very few people who could do what Harry Finn could, and live. He kissed his wife goodbye, hugged his kids, even the teenager, grabbed a duffel bag that he'd placed near the front door the night before, slid into his Toyota Prius, and drove to National Airport on the Potomac River, right outside of Washington, D.C. Its official name had been changed to Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, but to the locals, it would be forever simply National. Finn parked in one of the lots near the main terminal building, whose chief architectural feature was a series of connected domes copied from Thomas Jefferson's beloved Monticello. Bag in hand, he trudged across a skywalk into the sleek interior of the airport. Inside a restroom stall, he opened his duffel, pulled on a heavy blue jacket with reflective stripes on the sleeves and a pair of blue work pants, slid a pair of orange noise mufflers around his neck, and clipped the official-looking ID badge onto his jacket. Employing a standard turnstile crash maneuver, he inserted himself into a herd of airport employees trekking through a special security line. Ironically, this line lacked even the cursory level of scrutiny forced on ordinary passengers. Once on the other side of the barrier, he bought a cup of coffee and casually followed another airport worker through a secure door to the tarmac area. The man actually held the door open for him. "What shift you working?" Finn asked the man, who told him. "I'm just coming on," Finn said, "which would be okay if I hadn't stayed up for the damn football game."
"Tell me about it," the man agreed.
Finn skittered down the metal steps and walked over to a 737 that was being prepped for a short-haul flight to Detroit with continuing service to Seattle. He passed several people along the way, including a fuel man, two baggage loaders, and a mechanic inspecting the wheels of the Michigan-bound plane. No one confronted him because he looked and acted as though he had every right to be there. He made his way around the aircraft as he finished his coffee. He next walked over to an Airbus A320 that would be on its way to Florida in about an hour. A baggage train was parked next to it. In one practiced motion, Finn pulled the small package from his jacket and slipped it into a side pocket of one of the bags stacked on the train. Then he knelt next to the plane's rear wheels and pretended to check out its tire tread. Again, people around him took no notice because Harry Finn exuded an air of a man perfectly at home in his surroundings. A minute later, he was chatting up one of the ground crew, analyzing the prospects of the Washington Redskins and the deplorable state of employment for those toiling in the aviation industry. "Everyone except the head honchos," Finn said. "Those bastards are printing money."
"You got that right," the other man said.
And the two did a little knuckle smack to seal their solemn agreement on the disgusting greed of the rich and the ruthless who rule the not-so-friendly skies. Finn noted that the rear cargo hatch of the Detroit flight was now open. He waited until the handlers left with their train of luggage carts to fetch the bags and then climbed up on the lift parked there. He slipped into the cargo hold and inserted himself into his hiding place. He'd already picked it by studying interior cargo schematics of the 737 series, which were readily available if one knew where to look, and Finn clearly did. He'd also learned from open-source research on the internet that this plane was only going to be half full, so his added weight in the rear would not be an issue. While he lay curled in his hiding place, the plane was loaded with fat bags and stressed passengers, and then it was wheels up to Detroit. Finn rode comfortably in the pressurized cargo hold, although it was a bit cooler here than in the main cabin, and he was glad of the thick jacket he wore. About an hour after